Attention, this is an important message from the Indie Film Review. We just got in a broadcast from Blue Gorilla. Keep calm and share your bananas.
Oh.
That's right. Remain calm and share your bananas. Jared,
now,
over to you.
Bananas aren't a euphemism, right? We're just actually had to just give people bananas.
No, we are definitely sharing our penises.
Oh.
How do you share a penis?
How to share penis? Okay, Google. How to share penis?
Alexa.
I'm sorry, I do not understand your juvenile question. I am Google. Hi, everyone. This is the Indie Film Review. Okay, Google is going to be a new recurring segment. This is a show where we review independent films.
All it does is just refuses to answer our questions.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I refuse to answer your juvenile question.
Oh, my God.
Here we review films that are sent to us. Sometimes we find independent films ourselves. Just anything that we think is vaguely independent, we will watch it. High budget, low budget, no budget. We're all about it. We'll do it. We'll critically analyze it while asking Google if it's okay. Okay, Google, is this okay to review? I'm sorry, I will not respond to such a juvenile question. All right, well, that bit definitely won't get old. What time are we at? We got 2 minutes? Okay.
Oh,
all
Jesus.
Right. Maybe I'll give it a 2-minute cool down, and we'll see if we can revisit that bit later on in the show.
Maybe.
Dan, what did we watch today?
Well, first, you already said that we review independent films.
Yeah.
We watched a film called 36 Husbands. It's produced by Bright Blue Gorilla. That was the joke at the very beginning.
Yeah.
They have a really cool logo, I think.
It is. Yeah, it's cool.
It made me happy. Anyway, this film is hard to describe because it's, I don't quite understand the necessity of 36 Husbands, but I liked the spy espionage-ness of it. Like, I don't know. This film hit me in a lot of weird ways. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's an odd film, I'll say that. But it was a fun, odd film in a lot of areas. Where was I? It's basically Charlie's Angels, but one might argue on par with Charlie's Angels, because I don't really like Charlie's Angels. I would probably watch this again over Charlie's Angels, honestly.
Damn, dude.
Well, I don't know.
You don't like Lucy Liu?
Not
Tom Green?
No. Anyway, so basically these three women are spies, and they do miscellaneous spy things. I don't think we ever really got a full mission. They just do missions, and we don't know what the goal of these missions are. The whole idea was to, you know, it was a pencil thin narrative that carried us through, you know, these humorous bits of film, if you will.
There is a major problem with this movie, even like just you trying to tell the plot, because I don't think there is a plot. And it's troubling to me. So I guess let's get this out of the way right off the bat, just so we can, because like there are some good things in this movie. I want to get to those too, but it's three secret agent women who they're all in their own kung fu secret organization that's like separate from the government, and the government comes to them and asks them like, hey, we need you to do these missions. And from what I understand, it's they are trying to slow down World War III.
Right.
Like, there are nukes that are going to go off, and they have to prevent whoever the opposing team is. I don't know who they are, but they just want to stop the other. Go ahead.
The best part of this film, though, is the way in which they get these transmissions to go on their next adventure is through this TV show called Blue Gorilla, or Bright Blue. I can't say Bright Blue
Right,
Gorilla.
Right.
And it's this folk band that has their own show, and the folk songs are fucking great. Like, they're amazing. And you just see these spies just watching the show, and the show is fucking like bonkers, like Adult Swim, Tim and Eric type bonkers. and they're just taking notes in, because they're writing down the code from the from this movie or this show, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And because you don't know who is who, it's a little confusing, but you know that there's two separate parties trying to decode it and then go to wherever the next place to go is.
Yeah. I just feel like the film is at a disadvantage because of how the plot presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have this action comedy, you have the kung fu, you have all these interesting locations and shots they're doing, but if you're doing it for no reason or like the vaguest of reasons, it's hard to keep a person's attention on what's going on, because I'm just like, well, why do I care about this scene or whatever? You know, it's like, then it becomes more about the characters, which, you know, sometimes then it's like, okay, is this a character study? It certainly isn't, because it's more about like the gags and everything else.
Yeah.
Right?
The shtick in this movie is strong. The shtick got me a lot. Like there's so much of this film will fly by you, and if you're not paying attention to it, you'll miss a lot of the jokes. Like, things are written down places that, like, if you're not paying attention to the whole screen, that you're gonna miss what's funny about certain scenes. Like, there was a guy listening to music, and he had just been broken up with. You see on his table, like, is the record that he's listening to, the album cover, and it says Songs to Be Sad By. I'm like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
That's pretty good. There were some smirkable moments, I'll say. I was kind of like, okay. But I don't know if I was really laughing a lot.
Well, see, here's what I'll say. I really enjoyed the silliness of this movie, because that's what it is. It's silly. They have a lot of fun making it. Like, the whole last 5 minutes of this film are just gag reels, like them doing the filming. And I really appreciate filmmakers who have fun in that. And it's not necessarily like a tight set. It's like, you know, they're enjoying themselves while they're working, essentially.
Oh, it is very clear that everyone had a lot of fun making this movie. You can tell by watching it, absolutely. And that energy gets projected into the film, definitely. I liked the vibes, is the best way I can describe it. Like, I like the intent of the film. I still do have certain problems, like I said. Like, I still would like a structure, a better narrative there.
I would like, I'll agree with that. Like, if I were to follow a narrative, it would probably feel like a stronger film, but I don't know. There was just so much that caught me and it just unawares, like caught me with my pants down. It's like, you're going to smirk or you're going to laugh at this now. Like, anytime that the bright group, oh my God,
just say the gorilla people.
Anytime they were on screen, I just enjoyed it. Like, if you go back, like, I rewound a couple of the songs and just listen to the lyrics again, because they're all so short. They're like 30 to 40 seconds long. And like, one of them's about radiation. One of them's about, they're all good. And then like one of the earliest scenes is they're playing a gig from hell. And the dude who's playing guitar is like sitting on this really fucked up table made out of human flesh. It's like, what the fuck am I watching?
The movie gets very surreal, and whenever it does, I'm 100% on board. I wish it would do it all
more,
the time.
More, yes.
Because there are certain scenes where you're just like, I don't know what's going on. This is so strange. But that's when I was having the most fun, is when the movie was like, let's abandon reality and just go to this strange, bizarre. When the lead character, Krista, like the lead kung fu lady, when she goes into her own mind and like meets a version of herself that's like telling her to go on this mission to stop World War III. and it was like a TV in The Rock that's like playing stuff to them. And I'm like, I don't know, this is insane. Like, I'm super into this.
Mm-hmm.
I like the stuff like that. I thought it was very enjoyable. I love the music. The music was super good. It's a real band, and I'm pretty sure it's Michael Glover's band, the director and writer of this movie. Yes. So I believe that he is playing himself in the film in the band.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure that's him. You know, feel free to correct me. I believe so. I didn't get the connection between them watching the the band to get information on what to do next. I totally missed that. Because I'm just like, why do they keep watching this? I thought they were just like...
I didn't get it either at first, but what clued me into it was the triplets, the Kung Fu triplets on the opposite side. They were also doing the same thing, and they explained it.
Who did they work for? Who did the triplets work for?
I don't know. I think the doctor dude at the end.
Because...
I think they're freelancers that were working for the doctor, but the doctor's the main mastermind behind it all.
Yeah, so Krista goes to talk to this doctor woman, right? Who's like, you need to stop World War III, blah, blah, blah. You're the best in the biz, and I want you to do it. But at every turn, the doctor lady is sending out the triplets, who are these three identical twins, to go, like, combat them or screw them over. And I'm like, why does she keep doing that if they're all working together? Like, if she's working for... You know what I mean? I was so confused by that. I didn't get it. The first time... She's in that hallway and they all come out and she fights them all. And I'm like, okay, maybe it was just a test to see how good she is at fighting. But then after that, they still keep showing up and like they're kidnapping people and like they have to go rescue them. And I'm like, I don't get the conflict here. Don't you guys all know each other?
Anytime that they're fighting the triplets, those scenes were very well executed for being such like a low budget feature because those triplets are all played by the same person. And it's good editing. It's very good editing.
The reason they keep using those triplets in like every, like as many Kung Fu scenes as they can is because that guy actually knows Kung Fu.
Yeah. He's the one who choreographed all of the fights.
So, Felix is his name in real life. And he basically choreographed it all. And he taught everybody how to do Kung Fu for, I guess, a while. They actually, I don't know if all of them did, but I was watching some of the behind the scenes stuff. And the person who plays Gina, the one with the short black hair, she actually learned Kung Fu with him and all this other stuff. And I think that's really cool. But then again, it's like that kind of gets swept away sometimes because then this other type of Kung Fu comes in where it's like pressure points and
Fist of the North Star.
Yeah. Fist of the North Star kind of like mysticism comes in where it's like, if I just touch your neck, then you fall down and you've been defeated. So that stuff like that could have worked if they had more sound design and like the impact of like them doing the certain thing, or like even if it was like a weird sound effect, like if they just like touched their neck and it was like wah 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 wah,
or you know, if I don't they know, spent more weird. Time at that dojo where like basically it's like a dojo full of women warriors who are learning this technique. Like if they had maybe given more exposition to the technique itself, because they do, but it's like a 30-second throwaway line.
Yeah, it's not that long at all. And they could have put Nola, the newbie girl, right? They could have put her through like a training regimen or something. Mm-hmm. Like, just so we understand what this like martial arts dojo is and what they're doing. And because like you really don't understand what their deal is. And it's, I wanted to know more information. And that's not a bad thing. Like, the film left me wanting more. And I felt like there are certain times they were focusing on things where I wanted them to focus on other stuff. You know, it's because like other people probably watch this movie like, I don't care about the dojo stuff. I want to get to the gags. Mm-hmm. I want to get to, you know, all the silly things they're doing. So, Dan, what did you think about the fighting in general?
The fighting got better as the film went on. Like, okay. I don't know if it was because of the way it was filmed, but it seemed like the editing was not aiding in the fight. Like, you know how editing is very important for fight scenes. That made, like, as the film continued, the fight scenes started to get more tight and looked more realistic.
It's the camera work and the sound effects are not aiding to making the fighting more engaging for the viewer.
But by the end of the film, it started to, like, look like actual, you know, old Kung Fu movies, which was great.
Yes, that's because that's what I wanted. I wanted, like, that old Kung Fu movie feel. Maybe that's not what they're going for. I don't know, but... Whenever Felix was fighting, it certainly looked better. Mm-hmm. But whenever they had other people fighting each other or you know, like if he wasn't there, it was they would try to cut corners, you know, where they would be like, I'm touching your pressure points. I'm doing this, you know, this stuff. And it just didn't work for me at all. It made me kind of sad. I was
think about it like this, though. Like they're cutting corners maybe because... You know, it's hard to fucking learn Kung Fu because Kung Fu is like a discipline, you know?
And this seems like a low budget film for sure. So I get that. But honest, because like, what was that one movie we watched a long time ago it was like a home movie almost, where this guy, he filmed his own kung fu movie, and they only had like two locations. It was like his house or whatever, but like, so like everything about that film was very low quality except for the fighting. Like the fighting seemed so good in that, and I'm like, that if the fighting was better in this movie, I feel like it really could have elevated it. But also, is that the focus of the movie?
Well, that again,
you know, I don't know.
Just that's not to say that the choreography was bad. I think it had to do with the way the blocking mostly, and the way the camera and the way the camera moved around the choreography, and then the way that the way that they could have left more on the editing floor.
Yeah, I agree. Dan, do you have a question for me before we go into the next segment?
Are we doing questions?
Yeah, I know, right? I got off like one question, so.
So you say you smirked a lot. There was not there was not a belly laugh at all in this film, because film got a belly laugh or two out of me.
I mean, that's good. That's good. But yeah, I don't know. The comedy really didn't click for me. I was more enjoying how weird the movie was.
Well, okay, yeah. So the surrealism is fantastic, but so just getting out of questions into like our scenes that we want to talk about. One of my favorite scenes that made me laugh a lot because of how, like, I don't want to call it stupid, but like that's kind of what they were going for. Like it was whenever like they were trying to get the earrings off the band member, and then each person just like started every time that one person had the earrings on, they would disappear into the crowd and then come back out and another person would be wearing earrings.
Yeah.
Just that gag was so good. And then one of the people,
what was the deal with the earrings though? I didn't get that.
They were, I don't know, codes for the missile launch, nukes? I guess.
Oh, okay.
They had something to do with their mission. Like they needed them to complete or to prevent World War III. But like the gag there is, you know, you have the guy that they're working with named, I think his name is Alex, and he just goes up to the stage, and the guy who's playing, the blue gorilla dude, he's playing with the earrings on, and you don't see him take the earrings off. It just cuts to him having the earrings on. I'm like, okay, that was funny. And then he disappears in the crowd, and then the doctor character has them on, and it's like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. And then there's the third character that wasn't even supposed to be in the scene. He just comes out with them on. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like an interesting take on the Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
like,
a little bit.
We're getting chased by the monster, and we're going through different doors.
I don't know. I like
that's
silly
the whole
shit like
vibe
that
of this movie. It's like old cartoon Scooby-Doo stuff, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it really was like that.
There was a scene with Nola, the newbie kung fu fighter, where so like she goes off. They're like in Australia trying to do secret mission stuff. Their car breaks down. She gets engine oil like bukkakied all over her face. And I'm just like, I get this. The gag is like, you know, they're trying to fix the car and then the engine oil gets on her. But like the realism hurts me there because she can just move away. it looks like she's intentionally under there to get it all over her face. And I'm like, this is crazy. But then after that, Dan, don't be gross.
I don't get it now. I see. Ladies and gentlemen,
what is it? Oh, no.
I completely forgot about something about Jared. It does. It rears its ugly head every once in a while. Jared has this issue where he can't necessarily suspend his disbelief. So, anytime a film becomes too realistic, he gets mad.
I mean, because there's like so many documentaries that I watch that look very similar to that scene. Like I watch a lot of documentaries on the internets, www internets, and okay Google, and we love watching all these documentaries, and I just felt like it was just too realistic because she really seemed like she was enjoying herself.
It makes sense now that I'm thinking about your movie watching habits and like what you, because you know, you're the one that is like, I like rules to be established.
Yes.
And you want them to follow the rules. And anytime something doesn't follow the rules, that's whenever you have a hard time. Like, I can't accept this. I get it.
And yeah, literally, right. Like the rules could be, you know, there's kung fu women. They're like, we know the art of pressure points. If we hit you in a certain pressure point, you're going to fall down. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I get it.
But you have a problem with some woman not being able to move out of the way from...
Because any human being in that situation would move away. But you wouldn't just sit there and let it happen.
To be fair.
To be fair.
You did say Bukkake, and normally they don't move away from that.
Well, in my documentaries, they don't. Absolutely. This is semantics. Anywho. So that wasn't even what I wanted to talk about. So we have Nola goes off with this old man on a farm. I don't know why. And then we have all the rest of the team. They go to this satellite research facility to do some spy stuff to, like, bug the satellite. Which you're like, okay, all right. We totally forget about Nola. I totally forgot about her. And then she comes back later, and she's like, oh, hey, guys, I'm still here. She's, like, covered in dirt. She's like, let me tell you about what happened with me. She's like, I went to work on a farm.
Shearing sheep.
Yeah, shearing sheep with this old man who I wanted to become romantically involved with.
So we haven't said this, but these women, their whole thing is they seduce powerful men who have the keys, we'll put keys in quotes, to World War III. And like they lure them into romance, and then they marry them and get them under false pretenses and then steal shit and then abandon them. That's basically what they do. So this Nola girl is going to do that to this Australian sheep herder who... How does he have a key to World War III? I don't know.
I don't know why. But she infiltrates him, and there was a funny scene where she's like, yeah, and he played me this really cool song of guitar, and I just was really falling for him. And they cut to him playing, and it's like, bing, dang, 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 dang. He's just like dorking around, like he just no idea how to play guitar. And then she's about to like make the moves on this guy, and he falls asleep. So it's like, okay, that's kind of funny, and I think it's interesting that like her thing is like older men. I feel like that would have been funny if they kept going on with that. Oh, you know what? Here's a gag that I liked a lot. Every time they would beat up a guard or somebody, they would send them to an island for a month. That was really that was funny because it completely takes them out of the game. And then they're like, hey, here's enough supplies to last a month. After a month, we're going to come and pick you up. They bring that gag back again when they send the husband there. Yes. And I was like, this is amazing.
I liked it a lot because I don't think, and here's where I'm going to kind of differ with you. And maybe you'll start to agree with me after you hear it. But sure. I don't think the pressure point thing was a cop-out simply because of that gag, because it made the film less violent. You know what I mean? Like normally spy thrillers are like filled with murder and death and death-defying stunts, but this was like, let's just knock them out for a couple days and make them inconvenienced.
This movie is not about that. Do you think this movie could be like a PG? Because I don't know.
Yeah, I really do. Like if they clean it up a little bit more, it would be a fun kids movie.
But no, I think as a kids movie, this movie for me would work even better. But Dan, final thoughts. What do you think about 36 Husbands?
The gags were great. One of my favorite gags was the triplets. They got there's this doctor character that needed something, and he hired the triplets to do that for him, and they succeed and they bring it to him, and then he walks away, and one of them's like, "Doctor, we had a deal." And he's like,
"Oh, that was pretty."
And
good.
Then he just gives them a checkup.
Yeah, that was actually kind of good.
That made me laugh so much.
Some of the gags work. It's certainly hit or miss. I thought this movie was okay.
My enjoyment was split between like the silliness of the gags and just like the professionalism of the music used. Like the folk songs were produced very well.
The music is the strongest part of this movie for sure. I almost wish it was a musical. I wish that they just incorporated all the songs and had them sing and dance. And enjoyment.
That's what I thought it was going to be after I read the synopsis. I'm like, ooh, a spy musical? That's interesting.
Yeah, it would have been so amazing. I think it would have definitely elevated it to a point where my enjoyment would have been increased tenfold. But, all in all, it's a... inoffensive comedy that just did not hold my attention well enough because I thought the plot was lacking. And when it seems like the characters don't care, then it's hard for me to care.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Dan, do you have any recommendations?
I do have a recommendation, Jared. You know me and me watching horror movies constantly. I got around to watching a film called Eaten Alive. It is Eaten Alive.
Okay.
Yeah. Eaten. God damn. Eaten Alive. Anyway, it's a 1976 film directed by Tobe Hooper, who directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 years prior.
Nice.
This film is Chainsaw is his masterpiece, but this film is crazy. The whole film is set on a soundstage, so it kind of has this otherworldly feel to it. It definitely feels artificial, but that just kind of adds to the creepiness of it. And the whole premise is this guy, this redneck. He's kind of like a psychopath, but like he just goes into fits of rage. He's like a functioning psychopath. He doesn't want mm-hmm. to, but he does. But he owns a crocodile in this pond in front of his hotel. And anybody who like goes against his morals, he basically kills and feeds at the crocodile. And you got Robert Englund in it playing like this really womanizing, like he's a gross redneck dude. Uh-huh. Oh, it's so good. Like it made me. Who's the guy who plays the psychotic redneck? Because his acting was fantastic.
Neville Did it make Brand. You want to own a crocodile?
No. Neville Brand is the guy who does the redneck, and man, nice. He is out of this world. Like, just it's very much in the same vein as Texas Chainsaw. Like, you know, the guy who is in the van, and he's like kind of talking like this, and
like
the guy
he's like, I won't hurt you.
Yeah, he goes in between that personality and a personality of like this old kind-hearted dude who runs a hotel. But anytime people piss him off, he starts to get like
are people legit pissing him off, or is it like his perceived perception. Slight?
Yeah. A lot of it's misguided. Yeah. It's a wonderful movie. It's on Amazon, but you can find us on Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com.
Okay, Google, please tell me about Necropodicon Network.
I'm sorry. I will not answer you, juvenile question.
I do not understand the question. Necropodicon Network is a place that you can go to check out other cool podcasts like us. If you go to necropodicon.com, you can go to the website, read our bios, click the link to the Discord, come talk to us. We got a bunch of peeps and weeps over there, just chatting about. We just like having a fun old time, you know? This is what we do. If you like D&D podcasts or movie podcasts, there's podcasts about, you know, all sorts of different things besides just movies and D&D. No, seriously. I genuinely like all of the podcasts on our network. I think they're all really good. I appreciate you guys, and thank you for listening. I think about you all the time, and Dan, you have the final word.
Okay, Google, turn the podcast off.
Hey, the show you just listened to is on the Necropodicon Network. You should check out some other great shows on there as well. If you like tabletop role-playing shows, oh boy, howdy, there's a lot to choose from. There's Wheel or Woe, Gunpowder Treason No Plot, Fate of Ice and Shocking Gasp, Omen Investigations, On the Shoulder, Sons of the Fathers, and the Role-Playing Guys. For movie chats, there's Indie Film Review and How to Survive a Horror Movie. Or if you're into all things weird, dark, and scary, there's Shivers, A Necessary Evil, and Yikes Murder and Stuff. Or if you need advice, look no further than Making a Podcast with Myself. Necropodicon has something for everyone. Head to necropodicon.com, and I bet you'll find your new guilty pleasure.